Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests. Viewpoint.
Good morning. It is Tuesday, the 18th of July, which means it is Viewpoint, Talk Radio Europe's current affairs programme with a panel of experts. Joined in the studio, as always, by former ABC correspondent Nathan Thomas. Nathan, good morning to you.
Good morning, Giles.
Labour Party member and activist Alf Brewer. Good morning, Alf.
I'm not sure. I am a panel, but I'm not.
You're
an expert.
A panel. Okay.
I'm not an expert. Plank. Most people call me a plank.
Right then. And somebody who's certainly not wooden, former Alistair Lee, international businessman. Good morning, Alistair. Good to have you with us.
Good morning.
Great to have us with us. In today's programme, we're going to be speaking about the latest news coming out of Europe in terms of Brexit as the deals get underway again. Cuts or divisions within the Tory party, the re-emergence of a former Labour leader, and the latest news coming across from America as well. 952-78-4000 is the phone number. Studio at talkradioeurope.com is the email. The Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official. We Twitter, we tweet, we are at TRE. Talk is good. We're going to start today with the latest news coming out because Brexit negotiations started again. We're back to Brexit. And David Davis, the Brexit minister, was saying that the rights of EU citizens and British citizens in Europe and EU citizens in the post-Brexit Britain were the first on the list. Nathan, your thoughts, please.
Well, that's something new. We've never heard that before, have we?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was there. It was the second round, and it's all of these things. There's a lot of ceremony and whatever goes with it, because this, unlike probably any negotiation in the past that has ever happened for any reason, is being done more and being demanded more in the public than anything else. And even when nothing happens, it has to be big news. And part of this is the fact that we have 24-hour news now, and we have the internet, and there are an awful lot of people who spend their lives doing nothing but reporting and telling and analyzing what's going on. And if really nothing is going on, they'll analyze anything just to fill their space or fill their time. He went there yesterday. There has been a lot of comment that, well, he only stayed 2 hours. Well, he went to have his picture taken and formally open the second round of talks with the EU. That's fine. Nobody seriously thinks that he is going to sit there for every bit of negotiation, because once you get down to this issue or that issue, whatever you're talking about, it's experts in that field, both from the EU and the UK, who are going to do it. There are probably, at this point now that this round is underway, half a dozen different meetings going on with different experts in different areas. He's not going to be there, and he doesn't know the details, and it's not possible for him or the Prime Minister, who is not going to be out there negotiating herself. But people don't want to accept that. They want the head of the government or the head of the negotiating committee to be there all the time, acting like they're doing something. There was the picture in the newspaper that there was so much comment made about the EU side had all these papers in front of them, and the UK side didn't have any papers there. This was big news. What does it matter? They probably just sat down at the table. You leave the media in for 2 minutes to take pictures. They take their pictures and leave, and nothing really has happened. But yet that is very important that the British side had not put papers on the table.
Alf, where's your take as where we stand at the moment with regards to the negotiations over the UK's withdrawal from Europe?
Well, I think Nathan is summed it up in the right way, because it was just about formalising the second round of discussions. And they're not even negotiations, they're discussions in the main, because negotiations end up with a finished product, and that ain't going to happen for a long, long time. Plus the fact, what you don't see, I think Nathan was in it, he must know, but you just look at it and go, so what's the story for the media? Six people turn up, they sit in a room for 15 minutes or 20 minutes, say nothing, smile at a camera, and then get up to leave. And the media have got 2 hours of television to fill. That's... and the papers have got 70 inches of newspaper columns to fill.
And how so many they... hundred internet people have their blog or their whatever so, that they've got
so
to...
So they all have to make it up. What people forget is, they do mention it occasionally, I can't remember whether it was 84 or 94, is either 84 or 94 civil servants in Brussels today negotiating. That's who does all the negotiating, the people who know what they're talking about, the people who know what the law is, the people who know what trade is about, the people who know everything are the ones that do it all. And then when they've arrived at conclusions, when...
Okay, try that again.
Giles trying to cut me off.
No, absolutely not. You're being so animated, you're waving your hands around.
I know I would, because I get animated with all this nonsense. But the... so what really is going to happen now is that there's going to be, what is it, another 3-4 weeks, and then there'll be another report back on what's happened on the second round and whether we've got any further, like on individuals' rights and stuff like that. And that's when you'll have another whole series of conversations in the media, by which time the civil servants have moved on to phase 3, because that's where they'll be going. Because at the end of the day, what is it, March 2019, the civil service in the UK... will have something to present to Parliament. The ministers may not have, and the government may not have, but the civil servants definitely will have. And so around about, let me guess, January of 2019, you'll start seeing all the leaks coming out from the civil service about what they, you know, what understandings are there, what understandings ain't there, where the breakpoints are, etc. Because what you can't do is go into March 2019 with general public knowing nothing.
Alistair, your thoughts on where we are at the moment with the latest coming out or not coming out of Brussels?
Yeah, Alf is nearly right. It's not 94, it's 95 negotiators on the British side and 45 from the EU. So why we need 2-1, I don't know, but that's what the government have...
Two heads are better than one.
Beat them with numbers.
Yeah. And Barnier, who is leading the negotiations from the EU perspective, has started his stopwatch on one occasion. He gave the British 5 days to agree that the European Court of Justice would be responsible for ruling any disputes over the potential agreement that's reached. In the meantime, Boris was spotted in Parliament suggesting that the EU could go whistle, and Barnier's response was TikTok, 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 and he's basically given 5 days for response. The 5 days is gone, it's up, but Barnier's forgotten to mention it. And so have the British. So whether there was supposed to be some exploding clock, his tactic of the stopwatches on has been forgotten. He's come up with a new strategy, similar, but this occasion he said that he will stall talks rather than walk out. So he hasn't set the clock on the stalling, but he's not walking out, apparently.
Interesting. As the discussions began yesterday, there were certain divisions within the Conservative Party themselves about the length of a deal. Dr. Liam Fox has been advocating a very time-limited transitional period, whilst Philip Hammond, the Chancellor, used the hung parliament as an opportunity to express for an extended temporary arrangements on custom, potentially lasting for as long as 4 years. Now, that would kind of effectively render Dr. Fox redundant as International Trade Secretary.
If we're not allowed to make our own trade rules, trade agreements around the world, then his role is redundant. The idea that we can stay in the customs union, stay in the single market, and be outside of the EU is ludicrous. Then effectively we would be castrated as a nation, no input into the EU, and unable to deal around the world. It's the worst of all worlds. You'd have to be completely barking mad to propose such a thing or even accept such a thing.
No, that's not true, is it? Because some of the countries are already in that position where they are part of the trade agreements but not part of the EU. Sweden, for example. The difference is those countries have all had to accept freedom of movement of people. And that's the issue. You know, I've said it every time I've been on. The issue for Britain is freedom of movement of people in the EU. Not from India, not from Pakistan, not from Bangladesh, not from Australia or Canada, of which we let more people into the UK than all of the European Union countries put together. But it's about this, well, we have no control over our borders. And you go, well, that's right, but neither does Spain, neither does Italy, neither does Greece, neither does France, neither does Germany. Technically, the control of people going into a country is about employment. If British companies didn't offer employment to European nationals, the European nationals wouldn't travel to Britain. But you go and ask any company in the UK who's in, you know, proper competition, worldwide competition, not European, and they're all going to go, but we haven't got enough people in Britain to service our industry. We need this flow of people. Now, the British public have got to get their mind round freedom of movement of European Union nationals across the whole of the thing. Go and ask Sweden, go and ask Norway, go and ask Denmark, go and ask Iceland, go and ask Greenland, because they all have the same deal.
Asta.
Politically, it would be impossible for the UK government to come back and say, we're remaining in the EU, we're remaining in the customs union, we're remaining in the single market, we're remaining under the jurisdiction of the EU courts, and we are not allowed to do our own trade deals around the world, but we're going to call it Brexit.
Well, yeah, obviously, but the single biggest issue, which you haven't mentioned again, Alistair, is freedom of movement of people around Europe. That's the issue. That's the single issue about being in the EU.
Nathan.
It is an issue, and to me the interesting part of it is the UK keeps saying we want control of our borders. We want control of our borders. And as Alf has just said, once you have control of the borders, you're still going to have to let people in because you need the workers. And the UK does have control of its borders over much of the world. They have it now. And again, as Alf said, they let more people in from other countries than they do from the EU. So once they have theoretic control and legal control of their borders, the question is, are they really going to control them? And what kind of control are they going to put on them?
And we've got calls on the lines. I thought we would do 952-78-4000. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Morning, everybody. Sharon Alicante.
Morning,
yeah.
Sharon.
We've got morning. Nathan is absolutely right when he said we import, in inverted commas, more people from outside the EU than inside, because the rest of the world obviously is bigger. When May went to India in her panic just after the referendum, India stipulated that there would have to be some kind of free movement, there was a big question mark hanging over that, fairly free movement for their citizens. And on Hard Talk on Friday evening, they interviewed Erdogan from Turkey. And the last question that Zeyna Badawi asked him was, would you be wanting, with a trade deal with Britain after Brexit, would you be wanting free movement of people? And he said it's absolutely an aspiration, that would be part of any deal trade deal that would take place. Yes, he said we may give in or waive it to start with, but it would definitely be an aspiration. So that's the first point. The second point I want to make is there are things we do know. Bill very usefully has Myra from the Citizens Advice Bureau on his programme once a fortnight. Now, that woman is absolutely marvellous. She's been to Brussels. She's stayed there. She knows the machinations of what goes on there. And she has said she now knows that the British have proposed a deal for EU citizens living in the UK, and it is not good news. What they're proposing, this was a few days ago, so and I do trust her sources of information, she doesn't come on and tell lies, that they are now asking EU citizens who have lived there for years, who are legal residents in the UK, to now start all over again, filling in an 84-page booklet to reapply for residency in the UK, and they're going to make them go through all sorts of hoops as if they were newcomers. This is not good news for us, and May, again, reneging on a promise, because if you listen to Stephen Ritson's, one of his promos, it's she will give a good deal for EU citizens living in the UK as long as it was reciprocated for us out here. She's not doing it. They're not doing it. So it doesn't bode well for us, but I'll leave you with those 2 points. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sharon. We've got another call on the line, 952-784-1000. Good morning, caller. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
I'm Kate Costa-Blanca.
Morning, Kate.
Reinforcing all of Sharon's points as so often. One thing bothers me a lot. There is a confusion here, and the three people have answered the question. The confusion of people being in against the free movement of EU citizens, because the way that Britain did this was to allow EU citizens to have benefits, out-of-work benefits, which is not what the Directive 204/38 requires. It limits freedom of movement to people with jobs. It does not allow paying out, it doesn't require paying for out-of-work benefits. Cameron was asked why he simply didn't implement what he was required to, and he didn't know the answer, which is one of the problems. Now, I think the possible guilty subject in this could be our present UK's Prime Minister, because I think she would have been in charge of that, or her civil servants.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you for that one, Kate. Alf, you're looking at me.
Yeah, well, I think you have to define, because often people come on and say these things like, Kate, you know, no disrespect, but when you say out-of-work benefits, if it's all about unemployment benefit, no foreign person outside of the UK wanders into the UK without a job and goes on to unemployment benefits. Not true. That's mythical rubbish that's spread by the press. Daily Express, Daily Mail. So that's not true. No more is it truer than somebody from the UK. Nobody from the UK can walk into Spain without a job and go on to unemployment benefits.
Yeah. But the point is, it is very, very widely believed, and that is
of course, it's mythical stuff, though, isn't it, Kate? It's mythical.
Yeah, but if that's where the heat on the issue of freedom of movement from the EU comes from, then it needs dispelling as soon as possible.
Well, of course it does, and that's what some of us have been trying to do for years, not just because there was a bleeding referendum. For years and years and years, there's been this junk coming out of the press and the media and whoever, you know, straight bananas, wonky cucumbers,
That was Boris.
Well, whoever it is, it doesn't matter. They have to keep on pushing this stuff, because the people who don't want us to be in Europe don't want us to be in Europe. And every time I look at it, the first thing, and I've written it on the top of my pad, there's people who can see it, it's like, it's the two Ronnie sketch, Europe. And they paint this picture of all these foreigners and this, that and the other. And you go, I just don't believe it. The biggest source, the second biggest spoken language now in the UK is Polish. It's not even an Asian. It's not even because there's too many different Asian languages, but I didn't know that. But the second most common language in the UK is Polish, and that's what people resent. You can't stop Polish people coming into the UK, but I'll tell you what they can't have. They don't have unemployment benefits, they don't get houses, they don't get all the nonsense that the press keep going on about, that people stupidly agreed with, and 50-odd% of the UK population believe that nonsense and voted to leave Europe. To stop that, it's about stopping people having the freedom of movement across Europe, because they don't want the Poles, they don't want the Bulgarians, they don't want the Romanians. And also that other nonsense, the people that Britain wants are not your top scientists, they're not your top doctors and your surgeons and all that, because we get many of them anyway. The people who industry want in the UK are labourers, common labourers, fruit pickers, vegetable pickers, people who box things up. You go down to the West Country, they haven't got enough people to put things in cardboard boxes. They're not looking for bleeding brain surgeons.
Nathan, talking about brain surgeons, is Nathan.
Well, people make freedom of movement very complicated, talking about benefits and all of this. Freedom of movement really gets down to the very simple idea that I can stop you at my border and prevent you from coming into my country for whatever reason, whether it's because I think you're coming in to sneak into benefits or whatever the reason, but I have the power to do that. Within the EU, a country does not have the power to stop anybody from the EU crossing the border into their country or out of their country. It's that simple. There are many reasons why you might want to stop someone or why you might want to let other people in, because we need these kind of people. It's simply the matter of having the ability to make that decision yourself rather than have the decision made by Brussels.
And we've got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, Giles. It's Roger.
Morning, Roger.
In Costa Blanca.
Good morning.
And just on a point of fact, which may since have been changed, when I came to Spain, I was in my 60s, but wasn't drawing my state pension, but I was signing on the job centre in the UK to get my stamp. And when I told them that I wouldn't be signing on anymore and I was coming to Spain, they said, "Oh, you do know that you can get job seekers allowance in Spain, don't you?" So I said, "No." They said, "You need to fill in a form." I think it was E300. So they went and got me one and filled it in for me and sent me to a job centre in Spain, the equivalent of a job centre here. And cut a long story short, they paid me €11 a day for 80 days while I was in Spain.
Because it was part of the reciprocal agreement between the UK and Spain on employment benefits. So there are some employment benefits. What you wouldn't have got is unemployment benefit straight away. And job seekers allowance was part of a Spanish person. Somebody could have a job, but their partner hasn't got a job. And they were allowed to go to the UK and go and sign on.
Right.
Of course they were. And also, you didn't have to go to the job centre, believe it or not, to pay for your pension. You could have just sent a cheque to the Work and Pension Department of Work and Pensions, like I did with my wife. You don't have to sign on to pay your old age pension.
Nathan.
Going back to what Sharon was saying a little while ago, and her points are very well taken, and they are very true at the moment. The idea that Turkey, talking about a trade deal, says, "Oh, well, freedom of movement, our aspiration is that there would be freedom of movement involved." The idea that Britain, talking about EU citizens there, are going to go back and make them fill, even if they've been there for ages, to fill out paperwork and do this and do that. I think the one thing we all have to remember at this point, nothing has been decided. These are all arguing points that for one reason or another have been made public or slipped into the public arena so people hear about them. Whether they're how accurate they are or not, we don't know. And no, the woman who comes in and on Bill's show that she was talking about, she's telling facts as she knows them at the moment. But all of these are negotiating issues. And as I said, this is all being done so much in the public. So you hear what somebody suggested today. You can't take that as a fact that's what's really going to happen. I mean, both sides are going to start with extreme ideas at one end, knowing they're going to have to give up this, give up that, till you get down to where you're really going to agree on something. So you'll hear a lot of things that there's no way they're really going to happen. Again, like the idea of somebody who's been in the UK for 10, 15 years is going to have to pretend that they were never there and start all over again. The idea of that really happening when this is all negotiated, probably not much chance of that at all, but that's what people talk about at the moment.
TRE.
Talk Radio Europe. Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Listening to Viewpoint with me, Giles Brown, joined in the studio by Nathan Thomas, Alf Brewer and Alistair Lee. Roger's still on the line. Yes, Roger, you want to come back on a point there?
Hello, yes, I just wanted to clarify that this job seeker's allowance that I received had absolutely nothing to do with my pension. I didn't need to go to the job centre here to get my pension. I went there because I was told I could receive job seeker's allowance. Interestingly, of course, I was not asked at by the Spanish job seeker's allowance people whether I was actively seeking work in Spain. But they just paid me €11 for 80 days, and I took it because I wasn't receiving my pension at that time.
And I would do that. I'm not being funny. It is part of the reciprocal. There was lots and lots of reciprocal arrangements that applied before, even before Spain joined the EU. You know, lots of things went on between Britain and Spain, and they've gone on for probably 150 years in some cases. And the signing on bit, I wasn't talking about signing on the job centre here. You said you went to the job centre in the UK to pay your old age pension, and technically all you have to do is write a cheque out and send it to the Department of Work and Pensions. I don't know what it is now, but when we did it for my wife, it was like £7.50 a month or some ridiculous amount, and she gets a full state pension. One other thing, because Sharon said it at the beginning, and we often get these stories wrong. Theresa May sent a team of negotiators to India. It was all about trade deals after Brexit. The Indian government made it absolutely plain to the British government negotiators, students. It wasn't about any old worker. It was students. And remember, there are thousands of students who come from India. I think they're the biggest users of the university system in the UK from outside of Europe. And the idea was that students could come to the UK without visas. That's what the Indian government was saying. This is part of the trade. We'll give you a trade deal, but our students have got to be allowed in. Because the issue is, if you give them a visa and the visa time runs out, they then become illegal immigrants. And for some, a very small fraction that I understand, it causes an issue because it is about deportation and sending them back to India. But, you know, anybody who's lived in the UK in the last 70 years will know how many Asians and how many different types of Asians have lived and are living in the UK. And the issue about, you know, I live in Spain. I've lived here for 10 years. I've been a resident for all that time. In fact, I was a resident before I was a resident here, because that was how you did it. My son-in-law now can't be a resident because he can't show that he's got enough money in the bank account. So they have changed the rules, and they are going to change the rules, and things will happen. And effectively what the Spanish are going to say is, well, we know you've been living here and you're a resident, but you're not a national. And now, if you want to stay in Spain, you're going to have to sign this piece of paper, and it could be 150 pages long for all I care, but you're going to have to sign this piece of paper because you're now no longer part of the EU, and what you had before was because you were a member of the EU. Now you've got to sign a bit of paper to say it's a UK thing, it's a deal that we're doing, you sign this bit of paper and you can stay in Spain. What I don't want them to go back to is all the horror stories that I heard where you used to have to go to the police station every 3 months and get yourself signed in and a new visa and this, that. You used to have to jump through a million hoops. That's the sort of stuff that we don't want to go back to. We just want to say, OK, if I've got to sign a bit of paper to say I'm going to stay in Spain, fine.
Roger, thanks for your call in, Roger.
Yeah, well, as is usually the case with politicians, after the question I didn't ask, I said that I went to the job centre to sign on because I was unemployed in order to get my stamp paid. I didn't get any allowance because I had been self-employed up to that point, but I needed to get my pension stamp paid in. Nothing to do with me paying them any money. But the only reason I phoned in the beginning was because somebody was saying that you can't get anything in Spain like the EU people going to UK are getting.
Thank you for your call in, Roger. 952-78-4000 is the phone number. studio@talkradioeurope.com is the email. The Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official. Mr. Davis, the Brexit Secretary, even, told Michael Barnier that the government... is the main subject of the negotiations at the moment in Brussels will be securing a deal on citizens' rights. Britain's priority is securing a deal on citizens' rights. We made a good start last month, and this week we'll be getting into the real substance. Protecting the rights of all our citizens is the priority for me going into this round, and I'm clear that it's something we must make real progress on.
The EU has said the same thing. They've said that their major or one of their top negotiating ideas is the rights of European citizens who are now in the UK. They finally agree on something. Yes, this is something we should settle and settle early, whether they will or not. And again, once they think they've settled it, as they go on to other things, are they going to go back and say, well, when they get to some other issue, is what they think was settled on rights of citizens really going to change, or is it really going to, once they solidify that, stay the same? If you're dealing with a deal that doesn't really happen until 2019, anything that is supposedly negotiated now, either side can in 18 months come up and say, well, we've been thinking about what we said we'd agree to on this issue 6 months ago, and we want to change that. Nothing is done until it's all done, apparently, but what seems to be the idea is that, they're not going to do citizens' rights and then lock that in, and that will be done, and everybody will know what happens. They'll negotiate it, they'll have an idea of what will happen, which may never change, but it's not going to be really locked in until March of 2019 or whenever Brexit really happens. So all of this is just very preliminary.
Indeed. And another news as well, Lord O'Donnell, who is the former cabinet secretary and head of the civil service, has called on the government to start being honest, his words, about the complexity of the challenge in The Observer over the weekend. He said, there's no chance that all the details will be hammered out in 20 months. We need a long transition phase, and the time needed does not diminish by pretending that this phase is just about implementing agreed policies, as they will not be agreed. And a former British ambassador to the EU, Sir Nigel Sheinwald, said there's a 1 in 3 chance of talks collapsing. An interesting one that came out, and I'll come to you on this one, Alistair, is the fact that Jeremy Brown, the City of London's special representative to the EU, has warned that France was pushing for the hardest Brexit. In a memo to the Treasury that the Mail on Sunday saw, he said that claimed that France sees Britain and the City of London as adversaries and not partners. Alistair, you've done business throughout Europe. Do we see France as an adversary, not a partner? Do you think France are taking the opportunity to leap in there and steal business from the City of London?
France and Germany have always seen the City of London as an adversary. There's been a battle between Frankfurt, Paris and London since day one. Their intention is to steal as much business as they possibly can. It always has been. It won't change. Perhaps it will become a little bit more out in the open now that we're going to be separate countries, with the UK being an independent country and the EU remaining the EU. I suspect it will get a little bit more aggressive. But coming back to Sharon's point of the expats in both countries, I think the British have put forward a fairly poor case so far. The advantage the EU have is that Britain's case is being analysed, so we can see quite clearly that they're demanding the European nationals in the UK to fill out an 84-page form. But what we can't see is how long the form is from France, how long the form is from Poland, how long the form is from Spain. We can't see that. So the EU has an advantage that Britain is going to be picked apart, whereas each individual, it's just too hard a job to pick apart each individual state within the EU. However, May's offer on the face of it seems reasonably fair. The stumbling block, because both sides are saying, "Yep, your citizens can stay in our EU, and your citizens can stay in Britain." The stumbling block is the legalities. The British aren't demanding that British courts protect their citizens in the EU. They're not demanding that British courts will protect British people. The EU, on the other hand, are demanding that the EU Court of Justice will protect its citizens ad infinitum for the rest of their lives. And Britain, as an independent sovereign country, can't be subservient to a foreign court. No other nation in the world has that. So that's the sticking point. That's the stumbling block. There is a potential solution. If the EU are saying that they don't trust the British courts, then potentially some third-party arbitrator might be a solution going forward. It's going to be...
It's called the European Court of Human Rights.
Who would that
already
be?
Exists. It's not the Court of Justice.
Yeah, but it's the
Court of Human Rights, which has always existed and is worldwide, not just European.
It's the Court of Justice that they want.
Well, of course it is, because they want to impose things on Greece, on Italy, on for all their nasty people.
Yeah.
And they're saying, you don't do sufficient in your own country. Spain, look out, mate, because all your corrupt people who get away with it. The European Union are saying, we want the European Court of Justice to deal with those people. The people who thieve millions out of the EU, we want to deal with them through the EU. And, of course, Britain have always blocked that. They said, no, it's down to the Spanish government.
So we have 8 weeks until this round of talks finish, and we're supposed to have reached agreement by then. If we haven't reached agreement within 8 weeks, then the talks stall, which will then fall nicely into what people are gunning for at the moment, which is a transition period. What they're hoping is that the transition period can be something like 5 years, kicking Brexit into the long grass, eventually having a new election in the UK, eventually having a promise of a new referendum. And then the question comes back to, will Brexit ever happen?
Nathan, you're shaking your head.
No. I mean, it's a fascinating thing. It just goes on and on and on and on. But the point he made, I think, is, again, very important about who has jurisdiction over who. And to me, the EU's demand that the European courts have jurisdiction over their citizens living in the UK goes against all common practice in the world. The EU does not have the EU courts do not have jurisdiction over EU citizens living in Canada, India, the United States, any place else. Why do they think they would or should have that over EU citizens living in the UK? The same way as an Indian person, as an American, as a Canadian, as a pick any country that is not in the EU, if one of their citizens goes to the EU or goes to the UK or goes anywhere, their courts from their home country have absolutely no say on their situation if they are in another jurisdiction. And what the EU seems to be wanting, and again, this is early negotiating and people are jumping on things that are said early and making it sound like that's never going to change. I think this will eventually go away because it just goes so far against common practice. Now, what the resolution will be, and what Alistair said, some third party can, you know, deal with this. I don't know who that would be, but other countries and the EU don't have this jurisdictional problem. You either have it or you don't. I don't see why it would be any different once the UK is out of the EU.
And I also, there's lots of glib things that are said, especially by the politicians, especially at national level. You know, Theresa May has made an offer that is quite reasonable, and you go, there are 28 countries in the EU currently, including the UK. There are 28 different sets of arrangements about what people have to do to stay in those 28 different countries. So there isn't no solution that the EU can come up with and say, oh, we're going to give all the rights, like, because they can't do it, because the Polish rights are different to the Bulgarian rights, are different to the Spanish rights, are different to the Greek rights. Yeah, so it's not a simple fix. And what's happened up to now, yeah, it's no different than if you're Spanish and you go to France. You know, two different arrangements apply. Two different arrangements apply if you go to Germany or Greece. No matter where you come from in the EU, you have to, and it's a bit like the cults. It's the country that you go to. It's what they dictate is what you do. And what exists today is an understanding of what you're entitled to. But it's different in Spain than it is in Italy. Residential rights in Spain are completely different to residential rights in Italy.
And we've got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where you're calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, Sharon Alicante. First of all, America does demand extradition of criminals from other countries to be tried in America, don't they? So it does work that way. And secondly, I'd like to know what Alistair thinks is completely fair about May's proposal. I'm absolutely aware of the fact that it isn't a done deal. I understand that. These are just argumental points to argue over, if you like. But it does give a lot of away about May's attitude towards EU migrants in the UK. It's all about attitude at the moment, isn't it? It's all about how willing you are to negotiate. So, you know, what is it about May's proposals that are so fair, Alistair?
Well, at the moment, she is proposing that EU citizens in the UK can remain under the same conditions and terms that they are currently there under.
That's not what Myra from Citizens Advice has said.
I agree in some senses that forcing them to fill out an 84-page form is a bit excessive.
Ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. But essentially, after they've bothered to get the biro and gone through the hassle of going through 84 pages, they'll be left with the same rights that they currently enjoy.
Make them go through that? Why make them go through that?
Well, perhaps it should be a 12-page form. I don't know. We don't know how long the form is going to be in Spain. We don't know how long the form is going to be in Bulgaria. But there's going to be a form to fill in.
Have you seen the length of the form you have to fill in?
So that
you don't get double taxation from the UK. It's 42 pages long.
Thank you.
And all I do is fill in 3 pages.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
You're listening to Viewpoint with me, Giles Brown. Joining me in the studio, Nathan Thomas, Alice Brewer and Alistair Lee. 952-784-4000 is the phone number. studio@talkradioeurope.com is the email. The Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official. We Twitter and we tweet. We're at TRE Talk is good. Please tell Alf that Sweden is a full member of the EU. He probably means Norway, has something that's come across my bowels. But there you go. And breaking news is that just coming in, that the former head of the Spanish Football Association Federation has been arrested by anti-corruption police in Madrid this morning. So that's the latest news. News just breaking there. The head of the Spanish Football Federation arrested.
Is that because somebody hinted to these? These people, you better look at the Spanish Football Association.
I think we can leave that one to the sports bar then to deal with it their own way. 952-784-4000, the phone number. studio@talkradioeurope.com is the email, and the Facebook page Talk Radio Europe Official. Should you wish to leave a post with you until 12 o'clock today, and Spanish news following the international news at the top of the hour. No Stephen Ritson today. We'll be going over to our partners at the BBC World Service at 12 o'clock. So we're still involved in negotiations for Brexit and citizens' rights, but again, nobody seems to be the modus operandi at the moment. We seem to be in talks about talks. Everybody seems to be making the right noises, but we're no clearer to seeing what path we're down, Nathan?
No, we're not at all. And just the conversation we've had this morning is so varied and so, well, I've heard this, this is happening, she said this, he said that. is just an indication of how complicated, how terribly complicated all of this is. And the bottom line is, if they have any hope of finishing up with a serious agreement by March of 2019, they'd better start moving a lot faster than they're doing now. Now, it may be going better than we are aware, because, again, what you hear from Theresa May as a public statement and what Theresa May is saying privately, although it seems absolutely nothing is private anymore in the Conservative Party, but there are public statements that are made by politicians all over the place that are often fairly different from what their position is in the reality of a serious negotiation with some adversary.
I just find the whole, all of what they're doing, I don't want to get onto the Theresa May stuff particularly, but when it comes to the Brexit stuff, there's like, we used to have a saying when we were negotiators, it was like negotiating with a town hall clock. It depended which face of the clock you were looking at as to what the time was, because they were always different. And that's what you're getting now. You're getting all this feedback that one person thinks this, one person thinks that, one person... I don't know if there's a concerted effort. I think the concerted effort of the Conservatives is to say, you know, let's get these negotiations out of the way. Let's at least do the clearing of the undergrowth. Let's see what the real issues are that we know we're going to have a fallout on, and we can move forward. Instead of that, what you've got is all these different people having their opinion about, you know, what should come along next. Especially, you know, I think they should change Davis. No. Put him alongside. Send Boris Johnson in with all his diplomatic skills. Send him in as the negotiator for Brexit. And that way we'll be absolutely guaranteed that it will never happen.
Alistair's
and
left.
I thought Sweden, by the way, had its own currency, which means it's not a full member of the EU as regards Europe.
Right then. Alistair Lee's left eyebrow rose about 5 foot to the perpendicular there. Alistair, the thought of Boris Johnson being sent in to deal with Europe.
Yeah, I'm glad that he's not. But I don't think there's going to be a deal anyway. I think the whole 2 years is a waste of time. There's every chance of no deal at all happening. Partly, I think it will stall when it comes to this divorce bill, which a number was plucked out of the air. Initially, it was 50 billion. Nice round number, thin air, no justification for it. That very quickly doubled to 100 billion. Then another number was mentioned called 84 billion, with no justification whatsoever. And then someone from the British side said, ah, so I presume that these are liabilities that you say that we have. What about the assets? Obviously, we know that there are quite a lot of assets within the EU. I'm sure more than 84 billion to share around. Effectively, we're shareholders in this club. So I don't think we're going to reach any agreement. And politically, if they agreed to pay 50 billion... That's the end of May. The knives will be out very quickly. I just can't see a deal being struck. So where does that leave us? It leaves us with WTO. It leaves us with all of the 4 million expats from either side in limbo, in a terrible situation. Not sure if they have the right to work. Not sure if they have the right of abode. Not sure if they have the right to health and pensions.
Or as Tony Blair said over the weekend, it just means Brexit never happens. You just stay in the EU.
And there'll be calls for that to occur. There'll be calls for another referendum. So is there a strategy for the whole of the negotiations to go pear-shaped and then a call for a referendum?
Aha. Aha.
The one thing about the money and all these numbers that are being thrown around, don't you really think there are a bunch of EU accountants and UK accountants who are sitting down and ignoring all of this stuff that's floating around in the public and saying, all right, let's really look at the numbers here and see where we are, and that they will at some point, and I would guess probably further down the line, because it's going to be a screaming argument over over when you get down to a finite amount of money, whichever way it's going and whoever it is, nobody's going to like it. So I think the reality of that is not going to be public for a long, long time, simply because it's going to do nothing but cause problems. But I think, again, the experts in accounting from both sides are sitting down and sorting this out and saying, all right, you owe us this, we owe you that, back and forth and back and forth, and coming up with a reasonable figure that the accountants say, I can go to my government, whether it's the EU government or the UK government, and say, this is a good deal for us. But I don't think you, or I mean not you, but the public is going to hear that number for a long, long time.
The accountants can come up with any number, and I'm sure the EU accountants will come up with theirs, and our accountants will come up with ours. I remember each time it was due to do annual accounts on various companies, the instruction to the accountants was make it less profitable, and bang, out of thin air, they made it less profitable. Yeah. Amazing. And then when we were selling companies, we said, make it more profitable. And amazingly, they did that as well. So accountants can do whatever you instruct them to do.
Yes, yes, they can. But you have two sides of accountants trying to come up with one number from different angles. And I think they will do that. But nobody's going to want to make that number public, because everybody will argue about it one way or the other. Oh, it shouldn't have been this, it should have been that, it should have been this, it should have been that. But somewhere along the line, there is going to be a payment one direction or the other as the UK exits Brexit. I have no idea who's going to owe who, but it will. It is a reality. I mean, I doubt if they're going to come up with zero as the number and, okay, everybody is fine, just nobody owes anybody anything. But the accountants will do this. They will have a justification, and they will go back to their bosses and say, this is it. We have studied this for whatever, and this is the best deal we are going to get. And yeah, that'll be that issue.
And from the British politician's side, it's not their money. They're not actually getting their wallets out and spending. So they'll agree to a number, so long as it's reasonably small.
As long as it's reasonably small. Those bongos means we've reached the end of the first half of Brexit. International news and then Spanish news. And we're back with more, including divisions in the Conservatives and an old member of the Labour Party. Leader of the Labour Party comes back. More after the break.